I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jeffrey Hazlett. Jeffrey is the primetime business TV host and host of multiple shows on the digital television network C-Suite TV. Jeffrey is a global business celebrity, a speaker, a best-selling author. He is the chairman of the C-Suite Network, home of the world's most powerful network of C-Suite leaders. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it, David.
You have a really fascinating background. I wonder if you could just spend a few minutes telling us about it.
Well, you know, I could go all the way back to my childhood, but you know, I grew up in the, my father was in the military, we moved around a lot. I went on to work a little bit in government, started off as going to work for a congressman and senator. So did that. Then I went from there to working for as a lobbyist and fundraiser for the American Diabetes Association, and then started my own public relations company, which then led on to buying and selling over 250 companies over my career. And my last big stint was running a budget of about $17 billion with Eastman Kodak, where I was chief marketing officer. Left there about 5 years ago and went out on my own again and started up a couple of different companies. And here I am on your podcast.
Awesome, awesome. I'm so grateful that you're here. So tell me, you obviously have a lot of experience as an entrepreneur and as a business leader. What does it mean to be an entrepreneur in 2015?
Well, it's like everything. It's everything to me in terms of being able to just go and do what you want. You know, I think every year just keeps getting better. I think the opportunities are endless for you. And so whether it was last year, this year, or 10 years ago, I think it just the opportunities to be able to make money and do it the way you want are even more than they used to be, say, 5-10 years ago, because you can sit at home and you can look like a massive big company and still be sitting in a pair of shorts somewhere. So, you know, and there's just, for those people who want to get it done, the opportunity is there for you to do it. It's just a matter of getting the focus that you want around the fact that you're going to get something done. And then defining the market, defining what you want to do, how much resources you have, and then seeing if you could scale it.
Talk to me a little bit about this issue of focus.
Well, I think that's probably one of the biggest areas that most people have to do, especially entrepreneurs. You know, we tend to have, I don't know if you ever saw that movie Up with, it was an animated movie, but in there's a scene about these dogs, talking dogs, and they're always, you know, running around looking for squirrels. And, you know, in the middle of a conversation, they just yell, squirrel! And, oh, no squirrel. And then back to, attention to the details of what they were at before. I think that's the biggest issue for most leaders and most entrepreneurs. We see opportunity in everything there is. I mean, you know, I can't remember which book it was, but I've written a couple of books, but I think it was my first book, The Mirror Test, where I actually wrote about, you know, I went to a thing my wife said, you got to go to this or I'm leaving you kind of thing, which was around for workaholics. She said, you're workaholic. So I went to this, alcoholics, workaholics, drugaholic program for a weekend. And while I'm sitting there over the weekend, I'm trying to figure out how much money they made and, hey, thinking out this is a pretty good business, you know. Maybe I should start one, you know. That's the kind of thing that most entrepreneurs are doing. You know, here I am supposed to be focusing on this, but, you know, I got started focusing on that. So I think that's the biggest thing that we have to do is to find the time to say, you know, hey, I got to focus. What is it? What am I doing? The reasons I'm doing it. In fact, that's where I wrote The Mirror Test. My first book is to answer the key questions in order to drive the growth of your own business. And I think focus is one of those things where you've just got to put it at the forefront of everything you do. You know, what are the 3 to 5 things that I need to get accomplished for the year, for the month, for the quarter, for the day, for the week, you know, that's going to drive the things I need to do for a business. And I'm always doing that for myself. I recently just, you know, took an inverted pyramid, the big end at the top and a little end at the bottom, and I listed all the things I needed to be doing, those areas of focus, meaning those at the top of the page and the broader section in the inverted pyramid, to the least amount of time that I should be spending on those things. And that's kind of where I try to, you know, spend my time. And I look at that often. I pin it up around my desk saying, am I spending the right time in the right place and you know, and being focused? And I think that's what one of the things that, that entrepreneurs have to look, work on.
Sounds a lot like the book, The One Thing by Gary Keller, where he talks about trying to work backwards from what it is you're trying to achieve and determine the one thing you need to do right now that is going to drive success.
Yeah, and I think some people have the ability. You know, like I said, I bought and sold 250 companies. I've been through this before. You know, and you know, my wife and daughter get mad at me from time to time because they say, "Let's go to where do you want to go to dinner?" And I'll say a place, and they go, "Well, did you think of all these other ones?" Yeah, I did. You know, in that millisecond, I went through all those things. I still want to go here. And the same thing holds true in business. So many times I make decisions like that, or, you know, other really, I think, successful business people have been through it enough to know they calculate all those things very quickly. So Gary's thought of, you know, let's back it up. Well, if you've done it numerous times, you don't have to take those steps. You can start taking the shortcuts because you can figure out your dependencies and the things that are there that are needed in order to make that decision or to act. And you could do it with a lot greater efficiency and effectiveness once you've been through it a couple times.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Jeffrey, do you think that it's different being an entrepreneur of a small business than being in the C-suite of a major corporation?
I get asked this a lot, and I think it's a good one. I think it's the same. All right, now, there's a different pucker factor sometimes when you make $1 billion decisions over, you know, $1,000 decisions or $100 decisions or you know, tens of thousands. But the decisions are the same. Whether you're in the Wall Street in a major Fortune 100 company like I've been, or you've been on, you're on Main Street in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, like I've also been, you know, the it's the same decisions, the same people you got to hire, the same advertising you got to buy. The scale is different. That's all. And so you have to just get used to the scale of understanding what that means. And, you know, like when I went from Sioux Falls, South Dakota to, you know, a Fortune 100 company, and I used to sit there and make those decisions about literally billion-dollar decisions, and I would go, well, is this good for my business back home? That's the way I used to look at it, you know? And you know, $20,000 is still $20,000, but the scale is a little bit of difference in terms of the way that I think you have to look at it. But it's the same decisions, the same processes, the same, and a lot of times the same people. That's what I mean. That I mean, there's no difference between a guy running a or a gal running a Fortune 10 company, and you know, the guy that's on his board at the church, local church back home. It's the same people, for goodness sakes. They're no better than anybody else. They're just happen to be at the right spot, you know, at the right time, and hopefully with the right, you know, the right stuff to make it work. And there's a lot of factors that go into that, and I think it's just something you need to kind of keep in consideration as you look at it. You know, most people can do these things; they just have to make up their mind they want to.
Which goes back to focus.
Focus, and then yeah, and choices, right? Mm-hmm. Because at some point, David, you got to start making choices. I mean, look, you can't be a leader of a Fortune 100 company and expect to be home every day. Not going to happen. You know, if you're in the C-suite of Fortune 100 company, you're on the road. Get used to it. Why? Because you got, you know, 30% or over half of your revenue coming from maybe from outside the United States. You might have a good portion of that in India or China or in, you know, or Botswana, wherever it might be. And so that means you're going to have to travel if you're leading sales or leading marketing. If you're the chief financial officer, not so much. You're going to get home a little bit more often. But that doesn't mean you're not going to spend some time with investors or on Wall Street or late nights. And so you have to learn, and I always use the analogy of a seesaw. You know, you get on one side, the other side's got to give. You get a big, heavy guy like myself pushing on one end, you know. If my wife's on the other end, she's a little petite little thing, she's going to be sitting up in the air and I'm going to be down on the ground. So there's got to be give and take for that. And you just got to have to know that you're going to have to make choices. And that's not easy for some people.
No, it's very challenging. So actually, speaking of choices and give and take, what do you think prevents people from making the kinds of changes they need for their companies to thrive?
Stories. We get into stories. I see it everywhere I go. Stories, stories, stories. Oh, we can't do it because of this reason. We can't do it because we tried it once. We can't do it because it's not in the book. I can remember telling, get this, David. I had somebody come to me, like when I was at Kodak, and it was like January the 3rd. And I said, you know, this somebody pushed something or promoted something, and we run on a calendar year. And so here it was, January 3rd, third day of the year, basically the first day of the work day or work year. It was that, you know, coming back from the holiday. And somebody proposed something. I said, you know, we should do this. It's like 20,000 or choose that number. It wasn't a great amount. And I turned to him and I said, we should do this. And then right away someone said, well, that's not in the budget. What are you talking about? It's not in the budget. It's the January 3rd. It's not like it's like December 31st or December 30th. It's the first day of the year. And you're telling me we got a $17 billion budget and $20,000. You can't find it somewhere because every dollar, every penny is committed. Are you flipping nuts? And so my point is, you get into stories like this. Oh, we tried that once before, or my dog ate my homework, or whatever. I mean, my new book that's coming up, Think Big, Act Bigger, I'm actually making a list of some of the greatest, the good, the bad, and the ugly excuses or stories that we get into because we get into stories that we can't do things. And I think that's a big, huge mistake for people because you say it's like this when it really isn't. And so, but if you say it like that, you start to believe it, and then it becomes the reality. But you can make your own reality. Just change it.
You know, I hear a lot from my podcast guests about what happens when there are naysayers around and the influence they have on you and how to avoid listening to them too much. It sounds somewhat familiar.
Well, in fact, my last book, The Running and the Gauntlet, I put it as a dedication to all the naysayers, opportunists, obstructionists. Excuse me. Who stand in the way of driving change in an organization, note, we will beat you. I mean, that should be the mantra of every business leader there is out there. Change, adapt, or die. That's the only choice you have. You're either growing or you're dying.
And standing still is not an option.
Standing still is not an option. You're dying if you're standing still. You're going to get killed. You're going to be roadkill. You're going to be street pizza. Because and you well should, because that's not what you should be doing. Once you get it to a certain, you know, optimum level of operation or efficiency, effectiveness, profitability, well, that's just then. Now it's time to shake it up and even get better. Continuous improvement. And that's why you need to be change, adapt, or die. And so you can't let the naysayers, the opportunists, the obstructionists stand in the way of you driving change in your organization. Because if you do, you're dead. And you're dead before you begin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. So given
you're
the
getting
fact,
you're getting me fired up here, David. I'm excited. Let's go, man.
We're just getting warmed up. So now we've been talking a little bit about different kinds of emotional issues and emotional roadblocks. So as a leader in business, how do you deal with all of these emotional roadblocks and deal with tactical issues simultaneously? Because there generally isn't space to sort of work on one then work on the other. As you said, you're being hit with all kinds of things all the time. So how do you deal with both emotional and tactical issues?
Well, I think you have to have the right kind of mood. I think the mood's got to be right for you. And so people talk a lot about culture. I think it's important to have culture in terms of things you have. But culture is a result of your organization, your people, and everything else over a period of time, and the way you operate, your standing operating procedures, and everything, the way you do things. And that's something that it's difficult to change overnight. But what you have to do, and I think it's more critical than anything you have in the business. Well, a couple of key critical things, promises being another one. But one of those is mood. If you believe your best days are ahead of you, I don't care how good you are, you know, it just sets the wrong kind of tone. And so you have to have a really great mood, a mood of the company, mood of, you know, your mood, because it's going to come at you and it can overwhelm you like you won't believe. And the key thing that I think most people have to have in that is have a great mood, because and understand that's just the way it is. You know, it's like folks used to come up to me and say, I don't like the way we just reorganized. And I'd say, hey, wait 6 months, it'll change again. You know, I just recently lost one of our biggest clients in one of the businesses that we have. You know, some people were actually crying about that, the fact that we lost them, because they were so emotionally tied to them. And I'm emotionally tied to them. I love them. But, you know, no one died. you know, they outgrew us. And that's just the nature of, we're not an international company, meaning this company that we have is just, it's a small boutique firm, and you can't handle the kind of stuff that these guys are going to do. It didn't say anything about us. That's just the nature of it, and understand it. And so my mood was, you know, when the guy told me about it, I said, I'm still going to, you know, punch you in the face when I see you, because I'm going to miss you. But, you know, will you help me replace the business? Yes, I'll get on the phone and call a couple people that I think might want to hire you. Well, there you go. You got a mood that I'm going to move forward no matter what happens. So I think that's where a lot of business leaders have to really spend some time.
Yeah, no, the mood is very important. And as Scott Messer, who was a guest on this podcast, says, it's not about this sale. And you're right. It's not. Nobody lives or dies by these kinds of decisions and these happenings.
Yeah, and if you do, you're in trouble with that.
Oh, right? Yeah. So Jeffrey, I know you're really active in the media, obviously, based on what I read in your introduction. I had the pleasure of watching your show with Dunkin' Donuts yesterday, which I truly loved. Yeah. And I know you're pretty active on social media. Not all leaders are. What would you say are some of the most important things leaders need to do with social media today?
Well, I don't think all leaders need to be active on social media, because some of them just really, truly suck at it. And mm-hmm. so I wouldn't want them. It's like one time I had somebody come to me and said, well, we're going to create a blogging program and our CEO should be the blogger. And I go, the last person I want is our CEO being the blogger. And this is at a pretty major company. I said, it doesn't fit the customer set and doesn't fit with the brand that we have, and brand being a promise delivered. So, but that being said, you at least need to know about those things and understand it. It's like, I'm not a huge Pinterest person, but I know about Pinterest. I have a Pinterest account. I occasionally go on there and look at it. It's just not for me. It's not what I like to do. But I do like Twitter, and I am on Twitter. But that doesn't mean everybody should be on Twitter. You should go with the things that you like and want to use. And you should understand that it's more than just posting, you know, pictures of your meals. It is a viable publishing platform. It's a way in which to find the people who are, you know, having conversations around your brand or are interacting as your community, as a fan base. So, you know, all those things you have to figure out. But you should know what it is, just as you know what email is, just as you know what texting. You might not text, but you need to know that that's a pretty cool, you know, option for a lot of people, and that a lot of people prefer that over having real phone calls or face-to-face meetings. So it really has to be an understanding of all the things so that you can be more strategic in the way you deploy the assets that you have and the resources that you have. Doesn't mean you have to do it.
That's actually really great advice, and I think that not everybody thinks about it that way.
Well, I think a lot of you do hear some criticism, David, you know, that people think that, you know, the CEO's got to be the blogger, CEO's got to be the Twitter. No, come on. Get yourself a chief listening officer, have that person do it, or someone that's more in tune with that if your CEO isn't of the, you know, and I won't say age group, but just isn't of the persuasion of wanting to do it. I mean, because, you know, we hear a lot about millennials. Well, I think millennials more of a state of mind, you know, because, and I was one of the first 1,000 people on Twitter. I use mobile like there's no other. I text. I do all this other stuff. You know, I'm not a millennial. I have kids who are millennials, you know.
Good. So, Jeffrey, I didn't mention this in the introduction, but you did talk about Sioux Falls. What's the connection between being a business leader and being a cowboy?
It's a little bit of the same, at least for me. You know, I tend to be a little, you know, fly by the seat of my pants, a little jump on the horse and ride and then figure out which direction we're supposed to be going sometimes. So, you know, in a cowboy, a little bit more of independent and a little bit, you know, not always going with the crowd, but still got to herd up, you know, round up the herd. So I think that's a little bit of my style. Everyone's got their own style. There's, you know, and your style is your style, and the way in which you drive it's the best way for you to make sure that happens. So just figure out what that is and be comfortable in your own skin. And so for me, that's mine. So that's, and the fact that I just like horses and, you know, like to do all that stuff. As you said, I'm from South Dakota, so I like to go home and go riding and like to do the things that we do out on our place and farm there.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Yeah. So, Jeffrey, could you tell me a little bit about some of your ups and downs and some of the things you learned along the way that may be helpful to people who are stuck?
Well, you know, I guess I don't accept being stuck. I mean, you know, do I get stuck? Yeah, but I don't accept it. So, I think one of the things, like, how do you smash through this plateau? What's the plateau? Why would you put a plateau? Who said you had to have a plateau? Who said you can't? You got to be greater than a million, 10 million, 100 million, a billion. You know, why? Those are just numbers. Doesn't mean anything. So, you know, what is the business that you want to be? I want to be the best, you know, like, for instance, you recognized or you mentioned our C-suite network, the most powerful network of C-suite leaders in the world. Boom. Nothing about dollar volumes, nothing about what's the definition of power? What's the definition of this? It's just, hey, this is what's the definition of C-suite? Well, most people know what that is, but does it include VPs? Yeah, it sure does. Does it include businesses that are under $1 billion? Absolutely. So it's more of a state of mind, but we put some parameters around that. But again, I don't look at things like it's a plateau. I just look at things that at the core of what I'm trying to build. And so I guess my advice to you, those of you who think you're stuck, well, get out of it. You know, you're stuck because you think you're stuck. Well, what is it you want to do? And so look beyond those arbitrary kinds of goals or platforms that you put on yourself and break through them.
That's great. That's great. Jeffrey, what do you see as some of the key ingredients for great leadership?
Probably the biggest one is listening. Listening. You know, I think some of the best leaders I've ever seen in my life listen, and they hear and really get to the core very quickly and very direct, you know, in terms of focus. I'll give you a good example. I just wrote the opening for my book, and in that book, I refer to this employee. This, I won't use her name yet because I haven't got a permission to use her name, but I had an employee stop by me one day as we were about to go to an appointment about 20 minutes from whatever time it was. And she stopped by and said, Jeff, should we take color copies to the meeting? Now, we were about to go meet with a company that was about to go public, and we were going to walk him through that process and what we were going to do and how we were going to help, you know, raise the visibility of the company to get him public so he can extract the most value of this company. And she stopped by my desk and about 20 minutes before we were supposed to be there and said, Jeff, should we take color copies of the presentation? So I turned to her and I said her name, and I said to her, well, let me ask you a question. In fact, I tell you what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play this game. This game is you get to ask me any 21 questions that you want during the month. You can ask me about the meaning of life. You can ask me, does this dress make my butt look big? Where's the best Italian restaurant in New York City? You can ask me the meaning of life. I don't care. Any 21 questions. But let me ask you something. Is that one of your 21 questions? And she goes, probably not. I said, great, because if I have to answer that question, what do I need you for? And so, and I turned to her and I said, let me also ask you, if I would have said yes, do you have time to make the color copies? And she goes, no. I said, then never ask me a question like that again. And so I think it's behooves us in terms of not just listening, but also being very direct about our conditions of satisfaction. And so that we're very clear to the people around us, this is what I need you for, and this is what I'm expecting from you. And you either operate at that level or don't. And if you don't operate at that level, I love you, but I'm going to miss you. And I think real leaders really get to that.
Right, but on the other hand, mistakes happen in business, and failures are quite common. Failures,
sure,
may be more common than successes.
Yeah.
How do you counterbalance trusting someone to that level with knowing that they're going to be making mistakes?
Well, it's okay to make mistakes. The key is to make sure that, one, no one dies, and that, two, that they don't become surprises, right? Look, in football, again, I give a football analogy. It's not because I'm, you know, a former football player, which I am, but I used to, you know, I just think that's an easy way to explain. Are people going to miss blocks? Yeah, without question. They're always going to make blocks. But now, if I know that the guy across from me is stronger than me and faster than me, and I'm going to get my rear end kicked every time I go up against this guy, and the quarterback's going to get sacked, well, it's a lot better if I come to the team and say that to everybody, right? So if you know you're not going to make your numbers, you know the territory stinks, you know that the product's not up to par, then why aren't we having good, transparent conversations around that? And so that's where, at a high level, great leaders tend to have these kinds of good conversations. It's not after the fact, it's before the fact. And so that's where you need to have the, you know, feel good enough in your in yourself and in the way in which you do things to be able to, you know, come forward to the team and be upfront about that stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's all about integrity.
Yeah, you know, I just integrity is a good word. I also think, you know, it's just about doing the right thing, right? I guess that's integrity.
It is integrity.
And
it's really important in business and in life, and people forget that.
Yeah. Well, and then start coming with the solutions. You know, it's like I have all these people come to you all the time when you have all these folks. They want to bring you the problems. Like, I don't need you bringing the problems. What the heck's the matter?
No, you need the solutions.
Yeah.
You don't need blame, and yeah. You don't need problems. You need solutions.
Yeah, I know what the problems are. Are you kidding me?
So, Jeffrey, on that note, we mentioned earlier some of the successes and the path that you've taken over the course of your career. Could you tell us a little bit about maybe one or more of the people who have been pivotal in your career, either mentors, thinkers, etc.?
Yeah, well, the people that have been real pivotal in my career aren't the people that typically you're going to see with Twitter accounts or on the front pages of the newspaper or on television. It's the guy's name, like Fred Pinson. You know, Fred Pinson, who is he? He was a plumber. And back when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, he hired me when I was young. My father was over in Vietnam at the time. And, you know, and I became a plumber's assistant. He gave me a job so I can make some money. And he showed me the right way to do things and the wrong way to do things. And or a guy named Harold Jones, who was a former Vietnam veteran, helicopter, Marine gunner. You know, he was my coach in baseball. And he and his wife, Gail, kind of adopted me in, you know, at a pivotal time in my young adulthood and made sure I didn't screw up, you know, and maybe, you know, help him redo his Charger. I think it was a Charger GTO. I'm not good on cars, but I remember, you know, putting up his, you know, his car and things like that. Or Mike O'Connor, who I bought a printing operation from Mike, and he became a great friend and was a state senator for years in South Dakota and ran for governor. And, you know, he was like one of those great mentors who, you know, showed me how to make profit and showed me how to do the right kinds of things. And, you know, and I screwed up and helped me get out of it. Or a guy named John Timmer. John is a, you know, I was a Democrat. He was a Republican, ran for Congress, but I still love the guy. And just a great, great businessman. Insurance executive, and then, you know, people like my parents, my mother Henrietta, and my dad William. My dad was a sergeant in the military, and my mother was a bookkeeper, and then went on to become a great real estate agent and sold millions and millions of dollars worth of real estate. So, you know, it's those kinds of people with the work ethics, and those are the people that I admire more than anybody.
Those are great examples. Great examples. Jeffrey, who's doing work right now that you're currently excited about and why?
Oh, well, the stuff that we're doing with the C-Suite Network and building this community is one of the biggest things that we've got going. And then building our media properties, C-Suite TV and radio. I'm doing a radio show on CBS's new platform called Play.it. And that show has just taken off. I've got great interviews coming up with Gene Simmons and Kevin Jonas, Piers Morgan, Mike Tyson, you know, just some really, really off the wall business people. And some of them are celebrities, they're still business people. And so we'll talk about the good and the bad and the ugly there. And then our television shows that, you know, we're the one that we've had on Bloomberg with the C-Suite with Jeffrey Hazlett and our newest show called Executive Perspective. So, you know, building those things, that's what I'm having fun doing. And then our Tallgrass is working with companies like, you know, DocuSign and King's Hawaiian Bread and so many great companies out there that we're just really having a great time. It's fun every day. Every day I get to wake up, I get to go out and do the things I like to do, and I get paid for it, which is awesome.
That's terrific. So who do you know outside of what you just described who's doing exciting work?
Oh, every day. What are you talking about? I mean, and I don't always know the names, but I watch and see everybody doing things every single day. And you go like, hey, that's smart. You see guys like Uber, you know, which I think is a great company, although they're fast becoming a company people don't want to recommend because they just keep screwing up. but they'll turn it around. And, you know, you see what they do. You see companies like TriNet that with their they got this great app called Expense Cloud, and they're outsourcing of a lot of the employee things that a lot of entrepreneurs don't want to handle. And you see things like that. They're just exciting to watch companies that you go like, geez, I should have invented that or I should have done that. And it's just fun to watch these people.
Yeah, because they've identified a need and they've started to fill it, provide a solution. Which is all about solutions.
All about solutions and making money.
Yep. So, Jeffrey, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
Well, you can find me and just Google me, Hazlett, Jeffrey Hazlett, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, Hazlett, H-A-Y-Z-L-E-T-T. And if you Google Hazlett, look, it's me. There are a couple other Jeffrey Hazletts out there, which they're still swearing to this day that their parents named them the same as me. But nonetheless, you can find me by just Googling Hazlett, H-A-Y-Z-L-E-T-T, and all the stuff is there.
Great, great. Jeffrey, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been primetime business TV host Jeffrey Hazlett. Thank you again, Jeffrey, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.